How am I supposed to eat my pound cake?
Welcome to Recotopia, a happy home for recommended movies, shows, and music from two people you can definitely trust. Trustability varies by region, no guarantees implied. Now, here are your hosts, Chris Atkinson and Jeremy Scott.
Malcolm, Jib, and Diggy don't play sports, and they aren't in a gang. They're always getting ridiculed by their peers because they're into white shit, like skateboards, manga comics, Donald Glover, and for listening to white shit like trash talk, TV on the radio, and for doing white shit like getting good grades and applying to college.
Hello, hello.
Hey.
How's everybody doing? Recotopia, episode 28. I'm Chris Atkinson.
I'm Jeremy Scott.
And yeah, I see some Sin City love in the comments. It's a little bit too much for me, personally. Just a little bit too much. Just a little bit too much. Sin City. You know, we can all agree that that movie's trash and move on, right? We don't have to pretend. Nope. We don't have to pretend to like that movie, right? Everybody who says they like that movie is just pretending to like it for troll purposes, I think.
Yes. You know, I was reading, this is neither here nor there, but I was reading 2 days ago about a subreddit dedicated to the Arkham Batman games that has created this joke they've been doing for weeks and weeks that there's an extra game called Arkham World that exists that they've played, and they've been playing it for a year, and the entire subreddit is in on this joke, and they just won't stop. And I kind of love it.
That's amazing. I may need to see the origins of this and start reading from the top if I can.
It may be hard to find the origins, but I'll send you a link later.
Might be, but I love that idea. Like, you've created your own, like, troll world almost. Like, it's kind of insane.
Yeah, it's awesome.
All right, well, today's big recommend is going to be dope. And what are the small recommends? What do you got? What do you got for me today?
It's no big deal.
Itty bitty little expense.
It's so small and light.
It's small. It's tiny. It's petite. It's wee.
Smickety small. Smickety small. All right, so I'm going to start out with The Princess. It's an HBO documentary that came out, I believe, June 30th. This is, without question, one of the best documentaries I have ever seen.
Wow.
And it made me angry. I grew up in the 80s. Princess Di, I knew she was a celebrity. I knew that the British media speculated on the royal family a lot. I knew the broad strokes of, you know, speculation of an affair, then they separated. I did not know. I was too young to know exactly how bad it was, exactly how little freedom she had in any moment. There's a guy right outside my window. God damn, he scared me. He's my buck, man. all right, so one of the reasons I love this documentary is that there's no narration. There's no modern day interviews with people connected to the story. There's basically not even any text on screen. It's literally just edited together archival footage that almost no one has ever seen. And it's edited together so cleverly, so well. There's an early scene where they're trying to get baby William, he's like two, to look through the eyepiece of the VHS recorder camera that one of the news guys has. And he's got it down to the ground, and they get William up there. And then he looks into the eyepiece. The guy directing this movie got the footage from that tape inside that news camera. And it is a wall of paparazzi 3 feet away taking his picture. And he doesn't have to be heavy-handed with the editing because the footage does it for him. Like, there's a scene, once the Camilla Parker Bowles stuff starts speculating, there's footage of a hunt, and Charles is there, and Camilla is there, even though they aren't shown speaking to each other. But you also, at the same time, are hearing all kinds of audio, media, panel show speculation, all kinds of news coverage. And then it shows the dogs tearing a rabbit apart to pieces. And it, if this was a movie where they were trying to underscore that the princess character mm-hmm. is being torn to pieces by the media, and then they cut to footage of a rabbit being torn to pieces, that would be heavy-handed. Mm-hmm. But he doesn't have to do that. It's footage from their lives.
Mm-hmm.
There's a moment late after they've separated, because when they separate, they're like, well, hopefully you will leave us alone now and let our private lives be private. And they didn't. They just mm-hmm. they stepped up their harassment of her. There's a shot of her stone wall at her new residence, and these guys are up on step ladders so they can take pictures over it. A few scenes later, they've built two-story scaffolds, so they, and there's guys up there just basically constantly filming her yard.
Mm-hmm.
She goes through the airport at one point and has to put a tennis racket in front of her face. She's got on glasses. And they are making her run into them, and they're being dicks. They're like, just let us get one picture and we'll stop. You know, we just need one picture. And she said, no.
Mm-hmm.
And then a little girl runs up to her and hands her flowers, and she stops and bends down and speaks to the little girl and takes the flowers. And even in the midst of being shark food, she still stopped. And she still had this spirit about her that was so special. I was blown away by this documentary. I didn't know what it was when it started. I mean, I knew it was Princess Di, but I was expecting typical stuff, lots of drone footage of streets, narration.
Yeah.
And I love a documentary that just lets me see the footage mm-hmm. and doesn't even need to really tell a story other than what's right there on the screen. And I don't want to diminish what we here in America did to Britney Spears and other famous people. But Princess Di had it 10 times worse. I just never knew how bad it was. And it was really eye-opening. It made me very, very angry. I ranted about it to my wife for like 30 minutes. It was unfair to her. it's on HBO. It's called The Princess. I think it's really moving and important, and I really loved it. So there you go.
Yeah, I watched it after you recommended it earlier in the week. And the thing that I took out of it was just how many people think they know somebody just by having seen footage of things and heard somebody talk, or like they form all these opinions about things that they have no absolute clue about at all. And it doesn't matter whether or not these people are positive for Princess Di or negative
right.
for it right. doesn't matter, because you can't, I'm sitting there going like, everybody's like just saying this with like 100% conviction that they knew what she was thinking, what she was feeling, mm-hmm. what all this, and nobody knows, nobody can possibly know. And there was just a bunch of that. And that's what made me mad about it the most, was that, you know, and we see this all the time. It doesn't matter what news story you see about any celebrity. You know, it goes as far as, you know, like we just had one this past summer with the Johnny Depp Amber Heard thing. Everybody just knows what happened there.
Yeah.
They just know.
That's that shot where Diana's sitting on a bench at that monument for a mm-hmm. long time.
Mm-hmm.
And there's footage from just passers-by, two yeah. guys, and one of them goes, I bet she's thinking about her marriage.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, yeah.
It was just fucking creepy. Like,
mm-hmm.
and yeah, we do this, but that's what I liked about this movie, is that it takes everybody to task except mm-hmm. her, right?
Mm-hmm.
I felt like it was not super friendly to Charles. The media takes a lot of licks, but I think even her adoring fans are taken to task.
Yeah. For
making her have to try and be something she never asked to be. Sounds like you enjoyed it, even if you didn't like it as much as I did.
No, I did. I mean, I think it's, you know, it's important to see it's just important to see how much famous people have to go through. I mean, we saw the same thing in the that Michael Jordan, the Bulls, documentary.
Yeah.
where Michael Jordan couldn't have a normal day of life, basically, mm-hmm. for the longest time. Just wake up, you got all your team, and you got this thing you got to do, and then as soon as you go out, there's just mobs of people who want to talk to you have their story, their Michael Jordan story or whatever. So, the other thing in that too is they show that the paparazzi with the telescopic lens and everything, and they show it's really close up in their cameras, and there's a point where Diana like has this startled look and she starts talking to the people she's with. And he goes, you can hear the paparazzi go, I think she made us. He says, no, she couldn't have made us. We're all the way out here or whatever. And they're like a mile away.
Yeah.
And I was sitting there going, she made you. She saw figures way far away and thought, well, that's exactly what paparazzi would do. So, from documentary to mockumentary, there's a 10 episode series on Paramount Plus called Players, made by the same people who did American Vandal. Now, if you go into this hoping for another American Vandal, you're going to be partially, happy about that because there is a lot of things about Players that's exactly like, American Vandal, but I don't know if I've ever seen a mockumentary actually take some things like more seriously than normal. They play up the competition that's going on in this. This is an esports mockumentary where you have people on a team playing a game, League of Legends. Oh. This one team called Fugitive is headed by somebody who goes by Cream Cheese, and he 7 or 8 years ago, Fugitive came into the esports ranks and just started demolishing, and then they choked in the championship. And at the end of it, Cream Cheese is like, we're going to go back, we're going to come back and we're going to win 5 or 6 or 7 championships. We're going to win them all or whatever. So fast forward to the present day, they haven't won any championships. And the team has been bought by a Mark Cuban style owner who has found a prodigy, a guy who's like really good and single player named Organism. He wants Organism to be on the team. Now they have I don't know if it's a minor leagues or if it's an under team or a bunch of, I don't know what you would call that or whatever. Organism's supposed to be on that team, but it's clear that the ownership is just already like, let's get Organism on the team, which means they're going to have to kick off Cream Cheese's best friend, who's also not a very good player, but they're going to have to kick him off in favor of Organism. And so it starts off where they're struggling pretty hard and Cream Cheese doesn't like Organism. And Organism is a very quiet guy. Doesn't boast, doesn't say anything, doesn't communicate. And that's one of the biggest problems they have early on. There's a lot of American Vandal type stuff in here where when people are doing talking head stuff, there's just absurd jokes going on. There's a point where the coach who used to be a player on the team, also a friend of Cream Cheese, says something like I think that's like 2 out of 3. And so they lose one of the games and they go back to the locker room or whatever. And he goes, how many cannons were on that game that we just played? And people were like, what is he asking? What are these cannons? What? Who gives a fuck or whatever? And then he's like, how many? And he starts going through all these little game things or whatever. And it's exact speech from Hoosiers, basically, where Gene Hackman's like, measure the height of the basket and all that. And then he steps on the joke by saying, well, this was a speech from Hoosiers, but, you know, and I was like, oh, man. But But there's the one part that I just keep coming back to for some reason. It's just funny to me the way it's delivered is like he's like Cream Cheese is talking about how he had to live with his buddy and his wife for a long time and sleep on their couch for like 3 years while he's trying to get good or whatever. And he's like, oh man, there were things on that couch. I probably can't even say what's on that couch. Like, come.
Jesus.
So it has a lot of like really funny things in it. It's just that if you're looking for American Vandal, where they're like constantly piling jokes upon jokes on it, you're not gonna like that too much. But I think you're going to enjoy the fact that there is that kind of humor in it, but it's also taking more of a, you know, hey, this is a competition. This is kind of an underdog competition, or, you know, as close to underdog as we can come up with. And it's a lot of fun. So Players is on Paramount Plus. I highly recommend.
Excellent. Excellent. Mm-hmm. Excellent. All right. Well, I have probably talked about this movie before in past shows and podcasts. It's not The Founder. I will acknowledge to the listeners
not
that
the Founder. Okay.
I have somehow recommended The Founder twice on Recotopia in just 27 episodes. but this is Count of Monte Cristo, which is Jim Caviezel and Guy Pearce essentially are the main roles. I don't know if you ever read this book.
I don't think I have.
It is a classic piece of literature that I read in school. This is just a really solid movie that I think got lost to time, perhaps because I could maybe do a research paper and find out. Maybe it came out in the shadow of a mega blockbuster, or maybe its trailers didn't actually show you what the movie was going to be about. But this is a pretty straightforward adaptation. Caviezel is a French first mate, basically, on a shipping boat. Guy Pearce is just a mate. He's not as important. Or maybe they're equals when it starts. They end up shipwrecked on the island Napoleon's at, as you do, because Napoleon's been banished. That's when this takes place. Napoleon gives him a letter to give to an old friend. And stupidly, he takes it. And when he gets back, he is basically arrested. And they open the letter, and it's got state secrets and, like, you know, overthrow the government kind of bull crap, like the kind of thing Napoleon would probably send a letter like. And so he gets thrown in jail, and he's there to die. He doesn't get thrown into a regular jail. He gets thrown into Michael Wincott's jail, which is an island. It's like Alcatraz, only it's built down into the earth. The island juts up like a mountain out of the water. And this is the place where they send the prisoners. They don't want to remember. They don't want to think about, because they are probably innocent, as he is told. And he befriends an old priest who lives in the cell next to him. They start digging to dig a tunnel out, even though it's going to take years, and yada, yada. He gets out of prison. I don't want to spill all the details, but from there, he sets about on one of the most dedicated revenge sprees I have ever seen. I'm not even sure I can get on board with all of it. he sets about to humiliate and or kill everyone who had a hand in framing him for this crime, including his former best friend, Guy Pearce. Young Superman, Henry Cavill, is in this, playing Guy Pearce's son. It's just really solid. I have a good time every time it's on, and I just don't think enough people have seen it. And if they have, they never talk about it. So there you go. Count them on.
Yeah, I enjoyed it when I saw it in theaters when it came out. When it comes to adaptations that have been done a million times, I get a little antsy, cause it's like, here we go again. Here's another one. But this was really good. I really, really liked it. I need to see it again.
And it's one of those Kevin Reynolds movies that Kevin Costner somehow didn't take over.
Yeah. Weird. So strange. also I, over the weekend I saw, and I had been recommended this several times, but you know, the runtime was always tough to get around. RRR. I finally got to see that. I had a couple of buddies who wanted to see it, so we all went into my living room and watched RRR, and this movie is bonkers in all the right ways. It's one of those movies where the action that you know pretty early on that you're in a movie that's like, it gives zero fucks about whether you think any of this is possible or not. It gives zero fucks whether or not, you know, because so everything that happens in this is just insane and delightful for it. If you can go all in with this type of action. And I might have an internal debate with myself as to why I would like something like RRR, but not like a ridiculous Fast and the Furious sequel, right? So it's like Fast and the Furious doesn't seem to do anything any different, but I still find there's a line that RRR crosses that makes it better and makes it more fun. But this movie is about a girl who gets abducted from a village, these people, there are some people who volunteer to try to get her back. She gets abducted by English types, you know, English colonial types, always fucking up the works in these movies, man. They abduct her ostensibly for slavery and everything. Her, I guess it's her brother, older brother, and then someone related, and a bunch of other people decide they're gonna try to find her, but they have to concoct a plan, obviously, and it's gonna take a really long time for them to do so. Meanwhile, the movie is also telling us the story of an officer who is an Indian officer in this mostly white English army or whatever, who wants to be promoted. He wants to become a special officer. And a lot of people are like, why are you doing this? This is, you're kind of going against your people here. Early on in the movie, someone throws something over a barrier of some sort. It hits a general, and the general's like, we need to go arrest that man. But there's like a million protesters outside this big, huge, like, area. How in the world are you supposed to arrest somebody like that? This guy, Rom, decides he's going to take on the mob by himself. He goes out. and all these people start trying to fight him, but he beats them up. Or they surround him and they start trying to hold him down, but he's able to pull through them and able to get through all of that. Finally he nabs the guy who actually threw the thing at the general, and he has to go back. But this is just this big long fight scene where he's just getting his ass beat, but it doesn't matter because he's beating ass as much back, and ends up taking this guy back over the barrier and closing the gate behind him and everything. And you're like, oh, this guy's special. They don't promote him. They don't promote him, those racist dogs. And so, he's struggling to try to find out how he can go up the ranks. So there's a point where the two characters who we've been following, who don't know who each other are. There's a kid who's like about to fall off this bridge, and the Rom is on the top of the bridge and Beam, the other guy, is at the bottom, and they point each other out, and they, it's like they suddenly know this is what we got to do. And they do this audacious thing that's just impossible for you to telepathically figure out amongst the others to save the kid. It goes on like this. This movie goes on like this for 3 hours. And it's one of these, It's one of these movies where it's like, okay, we're going to spend 3 hours, and it doesn't ever feel like it's never boring. It's never like drags or anything. It's like, okay, we're going to spend time with these characters. We're going to spend time in their lives. You're going to enjoy it because every little thing that we do is going to be a big set piece of some sort. There's a big dance number in this. The action is intense and just insane all the way through. I can't recommend RRR enough, and it might end up being a big recommend at some point.
Wow.
That's how fun this movie is.
Where did you see this? What service?
This is on Netflix.
Oh, all right.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I have that.
Yeah.
All right. I've already been intrigued by what I have heard about this film, and I'm relieved to see that it's only 3 hours, because earlier I think someone said 4 hours, perhaps exaggeratingly so. And I was like, 4 hours, I'm not sure I'm going to have to do that in shifts.
It's not four, thank God. I don't think they had enough to go for 4 hours there, but who knows? Maybe they would have found, you know, I don't know. They did every insane thing that you can possibly think of in this movie, so I don't know what they would have done for another hour here. But, yeah, this is 3 hours, 3-hour movie.
Awesome.
On to the big recommend.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
I'm fine. It's just that you're so big.
It's so huge.
It's a good rule, but this is bigger than rules.
It's bigger on the inside.
Is it?
I noticed.
And it is 2015's Dope. This movie, I saw it back in the day, and I was like, I like that, or whatever. But I haven't seen it since, so I wanted to give it a revisit. And I think I like it better the second time, that I watched it. But this is about a bunch of, nerdy friends. The main character is played by Shameik Moore, who you may know as Miles Morales, from, Spider-Verse. Mm-hmm. It also has the guy who plays Flash Thompson in it. In the other Spider-Man movies, plays his friend, and Kiersey Clemons rounds it out. I think Kiersey Clemons, by the way, uses they, them pronouns when I looked them up. So, but does play a girl in this movie. So, anyway, this movie is just sort of like, how a nerdy kid ends up into a world of drug dealing out of nowhere, it seems like, basically, because, you know, he's a nerdy kid, but he lives in a dangerous part of Inglewood, California, called the Bottoms, and he is always having to run away from bullies at school. He's running away from Lakeith Stanfield quite a bit. Lakeith Stanfield, I think this is before anything we knew him from, really. Before Atlanta, before Get Out, This was a role he took back then. He's running away from him, and he's running that. At some point, he runs into drug dealer Dom, played by ASAP Rocky. Mm-hmm. Dom gets into a very funny conversation with him about early 90s hip hop. I think the funniest thing is that, you know, is that this kid talks about these albums, and he's like, well, that came out in 1988 and the Blueprint came out in 2001. They're not in the 90s. And he goes, well, you know, still basically 90s, you know, these albums, you know. So Dom asks him to ask this girl out for him to go to a party. And this girl is played by Zoe Kravitz. Zoe Kravitz is trying to get her GED and seems to be a little bit of a spark maybe at first. Between these two characters, God, why am I blanking on his character name? Malcolm. Malcolm and Zoe Kravitz, they seem to have a little thing at first, but he's asking Dom to ask her to this party and everything. And eventually gets her to go to the party as long as he goes to. And when he goes to the party, a shootout occurs. Dom puts a bunch of drugs in Malcolm's book bag and a gun, and Dom gets arrested, but Malcolm gets away, and Malcolm has no idea that these drugs and this gun are in his book bag until the next morning. And he goes through the metal detector, and the guard is just like, "Yeah, just go ahead. I know you're way too big of a nerd. He finds out when he goes to his locker that he's got a whole bunch of MDMA or whatever, Molly in his bag with a gun, and he tells his friends. And early on, he gets a phone call from somebody saying, "Hey, need to deliver this to a Red Camino after school." And so he's set to do that until he gets a call from Dom in prison saying, "You don't want to give it to that guy. That guy is probably a snitch, or he's a cop. So you don't want to give it to him." So now he's got people after him for these drugs, and he has to figure out where to put them. Dom says, "Take it to this person named AJ," and they sort of just get into this big, huge adventure at this point, because he's running away from these guys who want the drugs. He runs to this house where AJ is, and he runs into AJ's kids, brother and sister. And the sister is this extremely gorgeous, like, walks around naked, like seems to be on drugs already, but is about to get even more drugs. And the brother is like this like guy who's like a hip hop wannabe guy who wants to jam with them while they wait for AJ to come home. And then this all culminates in him finally running into AJ and finding out that AJ is the guy that his counselor has set up an interview with, so that he can get into Harvard. And this is a Harvard legacy guy. This AJ guy just so happens to be the guy that Dom told him to take the drugs to.
There are a lot of these kind of coincidences. It's clearly on purpose. And after like the second or third one, I began to enjoy them and not be annoyed by them. Because I think that the movie's telling a very specific type of story.
Yeah.
Anyway, yes.
Well, and the chat has already lit up with a lot of the craziness that happens here. Like, I thought it was kind of silly that he didn't know that the drugs and the gun was in his book bag until the very next morning when he's walking in. A nerdy kid like that probably has opened his book bag at least twice by the time he before he gets to school. That type of thing. But you know, whatever. You're not in for the critique, you're in for the ride, and that's pretty much what they've set up for you, you know. But when he takes it to AJ, and when at first he just thinks he has an interview with AJ, with this person named Jacoby. He just thinks it's an interview for Harvard. Actually, it is an interview for Harvard. But when he goes there, he finds out that this guy is those two kids' dad. And Malcolm says, "Dom told me to bring this to you." And AJ very coolly never acknowledges that that's his.
Yeah.
Never acknowledges anything about the bag, and just basically starts to turn it into a big metaphor about Amazon and Amazon delivering to the correct customers and keeping their reputation. And basically says, without saying it, if you're able to get these to the customers and make the money that you're supposed to make on it, I'll get you into Harvard if you do this. So being a nerd, he comes up with this idea that they are going to sell these drugs using Bitcoin, which is something that it may be the first time movies ever really talked about Bitcoin in this way. In fact, apparently you could go watch this movie and use Bitcoin to pay for your ticket if you wanted to. Back in the day, I did not realize this. That was sort of a fun thing that the people who made dope did for this. But yes, it's using Bitcoin and using using the dark web to sell these drugs. And then, of course, there's a whole bunch of things that happen here that allow this to happen more expeditiously than normal. We talked about the hot sister that's at the house. There's a point where everybody who's in the house waiting for AJ go out to get food while Malcolm and this girl stay at the house. And this girl immediately seduces Malcolm. And it looks like they're about to have sex, but she has, much like Uma Thurman in Pulp Fiction, has stumbled on a brick of this ecstasy and is already snorting it and is like just absolutely out of her mind. I think Chanel Iman does a great job in this, by the way. I mean, it's easy to say that she's a model, she's just playing, you know, naked girl or whatever, but man, there's so many things that she does in this that are just hilarious. Her body movements are hilarious in this, especially when Malcolm says, I'm gonna be late for the interview, and she goes, well, I'll take you, and she's like all on, she's just completely fucked up, and she's like yeah, I got a car, and she just like leans up against this wall and slams her head up against it, and you're like, there's no way you would drive with anybody who acts like this. She goes out, they're driving out there, and she falls asleep at the wheel, and then Malcolm like tries to wake her up, and she thinks she's somewhere else. She has to pee. She runs out in the middle of the fucking road to a place, by the way, a great Starbucks parody, a $7 coffee, goes over and starts peeing in front of everybody. And, of course, it becomes a huge viral sensation.
How am I supposed to eat my pound cake?
Yes. Yes. Of course, there's a guy who's getting interviewed about it.
Oh, God.
And the drugs she's on become known more as Lily instead of Molly, and people are looking for their fix of Lily, not Molly, and this ultimately comes to they trying to figure out how they can sell a lot of this. They enlist their buddy from Bandcamp, played by Blake Anderson. I can't remember his name in the movie. Blake Anderson from Workaholics. Let me see. He's playing Will Sherwood. Now Will is a white guy who wants to say the N-word. He wants to say it a lot. Yep. And he's asking why he can't say it, and they can call him that, and so on and so forth. There's that debate that goes on in this. Kiersey Clemons makes sure to slap him every time he does say it. But he is a hacker. He's the guy who's going to get into the computer systems, and he's going to use the dark web, and he's going to be able to set up a lot of things for them. While they've got this very convenient classroom that is never used, by the way, at the school, that they can use as it's like a Google Science thing or whatever that they've joined. And there's a computer lab that they can go into that nobody ever uses. Nobody, not even one person ever uses. Yep. That they can do all this computer shit with the drugs and everything. So he helps them out. And this becomes this big, huge thing, finally culminating in a big party where they play as their band, Oreo. and that becomes a big thing for the Lily drug later on. By the way, Pharrell Williams produced a lot of the music that was in this. I was sitting there looking for some Oreo songs after this movie, because there's some really cool ones in there. That Don't Get Deleted is a really awesome song. Yeah. And I'm Feeling Good and all that song. That one is really, really enjoyed this movie a lot. I'm glad that I gave this one another look, even though I had liked it before. Now I really, really love it. I love all the little twists and turns and like the craziness that it goes into this. What did you think? I've been speaking enough.
I really liked it. I am not certain. This was my first viewing, so I'm not certain where on like a grading scale I would put it, but it would be in the high B's, I think.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of little touches that made me laugh. There are plenty of obvious jokes, like the guy, how am I supposed to eat my pound cake, gets turned into a meme.
yeah.
But there's so many little throwaway jokes. Like at one point, I think it might even be the narrator talking about liking white people shit, like Donald Glover. like basically, mm-hmm. the joke in the movie is saying white people love Donald Glover.
Mm-hmm.
They're not wrong. I think everybody loves Donald Glover. Mm-hmm. The Bloods have a YouTube channel. One day they're on their way home from school and they have to go a long way because the Bloods are in the alley making a video for their YouTube channel. The kids do go out with AJ's son to get food. They are specifically in search of chili cheese fries. Mm-hmm. They say even before they leave the house, he's like, "Well, what should we eat? Chili cheese fries," almost immediately. Mm-hmm. So they go to this place that serves them, and they get into this altercation that turns into a shootout. And the two friends of Malcolm hop the counter and go back and are diving out the drive-through window to get away from the shootout in the restaurant. And the dude mm-hmm. goes back for the chili cheese fries. He sees the food sitting there on the counter. And he comes back in the window to grab it. You don't ever see them eat the cheese fries. Just little touches like that. I loved the Chekhov's gun here because I was waiting for that gun that was put in the bag with the drugs to come out mm-hmm. all movie long. I even said at one point, did they forget there was a gun in that bag? And they did not.
No, not even in this one scene where you swear at some point he's just going to be like, take the gun out so that he doesn't go through the security thing with it. But when he goes through the security thing, the second one that's not a big deal, they just let him go on or whatever. He's had that gun in his bag the whole time. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And then he pulls it on Lakeith Stanfield's crew near the end. To basically end that particular bullying relationship forever, because we see him in a montage at the end, like tipping his cap to Malcolm when he walks mm-hmm. by him in the school. Mm-hmm. I actually would have preferred the movie to end right after his speech to Harvard,
mm-hmm.
Which is filmed in several locations. And then it cuts to him on the street and he says, why do I want to go to Harvard? If I was white, you wouldn't even have to ask me that.
Yeah.
And I think, bam, that's the ending. Instead, we get kind of a miniature Return of the King, kind of like we have to tie off every loose end, and it's not bad stuff. I don't disenjoy those scenes.
Yeah.
But that's where I thought the movie was going to end, and then it kept going a little bit.
And there's no reason that they couldn't do all that prom Six Flags stuff before that big scene. There's no reason why they couldn't do that. That's why it's when you had that in your notes, I was sitting there going, yeah, that would have been a better ending, but is there anything they could have done? And well, really, honestly, yeah, they could have just put that at the end instead of putting all the other stuff in there. They could have even put the part where he gets the Harvard letter at the end, like in the credits or something, if they wanted to, or like at the, like right after he says that, it goes to directed by or whatever, and then it goes right back to him getting accepted or whatever. Like, you know, that getting accepted thing could have been in the credits, but I don't know.
Yeah.
You don't even really need to show the acceptance at the end. You're already keeping it somewhat ambivalent at the end because you see him smile, but you still don't know whether or not that really means yes or no or whatever. He might be like smiling like, oh, that's typical, you know, oh, I didn't get in. That's typical. And he just smiles because of it. So you don't know.
No.
But I agree with you. I think it should have ended with that speech because that would have been the powerful way to end it.
I really loved Kiersey Clemons in this movie. There's a line where somebody says it's like a game of whack-a-mole. And Kiersey goes, wait, what the fuck is whack-a-mole? And was just the perfect delivery, but also it's one of those jokes that you instantly realize, oh yeah, that person probably has no clue what whack-a-mole is.
Mm-hmm.
It's not an everyday reference for the younger generations.
Yeah.
I laughed a lot. I will definitely be watching this again sometime, and I'm really glad that I got to see it.
Well, and they also the part where they cinema sends that hip hop guy's music because he calls cereal burial, and where he doesn't want to say C words and the guy's like, but you're able to say crab, no problem. Like, what's the deal with that? You know? And she goes,
I would have thought the hard C would have been an it,
but nah. She goes, she's like, if they see the hard C would have been a big deal, but nah. Yeah, this movie is a whole lot of fun. There's a reason why I put it in the big recommend, and I'm glad that I got to see it again, and hope everybody else out there enjoyed it.
I do believe the chat largely enjoyed it.
Looks like it. Mm-hmm.
It falls to me now to deliver a surprise double feature.
Surprise double feature.
Be very, very quiet.
Secret. What secret?
Our dirty little secret.
I tell you something I've never told anyone.
And I just want to implore everybody to watch the movie Fresh that we discussed on an earlier episode of this show.
Mm-hmm.
Because Fresh would be an excellent double feature for this film.
Dope and fresh.
Mm-hmm. But they both involve a young person getting wrapped up in the world of drugs and then basically getting won over on their drug world superiors. But I can't do that one. We've already talked about that. I thought often throughout this movie about the movie Good Boys and the movie Easy A.
Okay.
Just because there was a lot of that fish out of water high school young kid adventure type stuff. But your double feature today is going to be the movie Go.
I was thinking about this movie as well during this. Yeah,
that's awesome. Yeah. There's so many parallels between this movie and Go in terms of the tone, in terms of some wild coincidences that make the adventure propel forward, in terms of young people dabbling in the world of drugs, where they have no business being and getting on wild adventures with criminals.
Yeah.
I think I love Go. I like Go more than Swingers.
Same here.
It came, I think Swingers has more of a cult following. I don't think as many people have even seen Go, to be honest.
Probably not.
But it's great. And I couldn't stop thinking about Go from almost about 30 minutes in to Dope. And I just think they would pair really well together as the same kind of romping adventure into crime.
I like this pairing a lot because I was thinking of Go a lot during this because Sarah Polley is the one who sells the drugs when she's not a drug dealer throughout this whole thing. Only the problem is for her, you know, is that Timothy Oliphant is not in jail during this time, and he and she has to worry about that. I like the comments, by the way. Albina says, you know, talking about the Kiersey Clemons character, Diggy would be dope at CinemaSins. That's perfect. Perfect. And Nick says, a good double feature purely for the name is Nope. So you have Dope and Nope.
Believe it or not, that actually came to my mind as well, but I haven't seen Nope yet. So.
Well, and another one that that came to my mind strictly for the business part of this was Risky Business. Because Risky Business, Tom Cruise sets up an escort service while he's in high school, and he has to write a paper about it by the end, which is another thing I liked about this. At the beginning of this movie, you sort of hate this counselor guy because he's like, because he gets this paper from Malcolm that's about Ice Cube, and the counselor's like, who the hell do you think you are? You're arrogant thinking you're going to get into Harvard. You know, and you need to write something that's more personal, and he's absolutely right. But Malcolm is absolutely right in the fact that he doesn't want to write that cliche thing about, I didn't know my father, or I had my mother only, I knew my mother brought me up, all this, I lived in a hard neighborhood, so on and so forth. So he wants to come up with, he lucks into a paper here. Well, lucks into is bad lucks, basically, then good luck at the end, into being able to write a more personal story at the end, which becomes that Harvard letter at the very end. But anyway, yeah, I'm glad you enjoyed it. You never know with some of these, right? Like I get the feeling someday we're gonna recommend something and like only one person likes it and everybody else hates it, and it'll be a like a half Warnatopia. So,
well, you know, as long as one of the two of us really enjoys what we're recommending, I think it's worth sharing with people.
Absolutely.
I am going to give you homework for next week. Mm-hmm. I mentioned this movie a couple of weeks ago on Wreckatopia. We're going to go with 1987's No Way Out.
No Way Out.
This
All right.
is Kevin Costner, Gene Hackman, and unless he's done it recently, I don't think Chris has seen this movie.
I have seen it. Yeah, I saw it. You recommended this, I don't know, maybe 2 years ago, and I watched it shortly after. Yeah.
Okay, so you have seen it. You didn't hate it, right?
No, I liked it.
Okay, good. So this is basically a political noir thriller, whodunit, after a politician's mistress gets murdered. I don't really want to say too much about it. But if you have Hulu on a premium subscription or the Roku channel on a premium subscription, you will not have to pay to rent it. It is available for rent at $3.99 on all the regular streaming services. So Hulu, No Way Out, 1988, that's your homework for next week. And I haven't seen it in probably 5 years, so I'm very excited to get back to this movie. I've seen it two or three times. So.
I particularly love the boxing montage where you hear the, there's no easy way out. Doom,
no
doom.
Shortcut home.
That part of the movie is excellent. So
we should end the show with singing every week.
we should.
let's do some questions. We got a little bit of time for some questions.
Question.
I got something to say.
I want the truth.
I am listening.
What is your favorite roll credits moment?
I mean, there's not very many good ones, by the way. Most of the time, it just seems a little bit too on the nose, even though sometimes they didn't even have the name of the movie ready when they came up with this, like in Scream, where Matthew Lillard is like, it's a Scream, baby. They didn't even know the movie was called Scream at that point, but it still seems on the nose. I do get sufficient chills when Richard Attenborough says, welcome to Jurassic Park. I do think that is a great moment with the John Williams score and everything. I also like it's at the end of A River Runs Through It, but Robert Redford has that narration through the movie where he says a river runs through it. It's this big, long sort of like finish to the movie where he's narrating, and it gets to that point where a river runs through it. And it's really, and it's just in the middle of a paragraph of things that he's saying. It doesn't seem like, it's not one, a point where Craig Sheffer turns to Brad Pitt and says, "Hey, a river runs through it." You know, it doesn't say, he doesn't do that. So,
I cheated with my first answer because it was the trailer for Raw Deal.
Mm-hmm.
But it was like they gave Schwarzenegger a raw deal.
Yeah.
Nobody gives Schwarzenegger a raw deal.
Oh, I bet that was Don LaFontaine doing too. Yeah,
I'm sure it was. I also like The Dark Knight at the end when Batman's riding away on the motorcycle, the cops are chasing him, and Gary Oldman does that speech about the hero we deserve, and he ends with The Dark Knight. And I'm pretty sure that's the very last line of dialogue in the whole film.
I think it is.
The Batman boy in me gets excited about that. I like that.
Yeah, that's a really great scene and a really good example of that.
What are we, some kind of Suicide Squad?
Yeah, that one's outstanding.
Mm-hmm. The first Nope in Nope. I haven't seen that one.
Yep.
All right, another question. What movie quote do you often find yourself finishing when you hear someone coincidentally say the start of the quote in real life? For example, when I hear someone say Jesus Christ, I can't help following it up with, "It's Jason Bourne."
Okay. You know, it's funny. I had to think about this one because a lot of my quotes come from music and The Simpsons and stuff like that. So, like, there's not very many movies where somebody says something and I suddenly get into that movie, but I do like somebody says such and such is dead or whatever. Somebody is dead. And I go to the Swimming with Sharks quote, with, Kevin Spacey where Frank Whaley tells him that David Lean is dead. And he's like, "No, he's not. Don't ever say that. He's just unavailable." So that's one that I like to pull out every once in a while.
I think I've told this story on a different podcast, but I was working before YouTube. I was working at a web design firm where half the company did IT servers and half the company did, we built websites and did marketing, digital marketing for clients. And we had about 6-7 employees total. It was a pretty small company. And we went through a period of about 6 to 8 months where we were just really struggling on the website side. And my boss from the IT side was a very analytical thinker. And he did this entire speech about how we aren't selling our websites at the correct price. We are selling them too low because the effort that we're spending over here doesn't come out in the money over here. And he ended by saying, "The price is wrong." And I went, "Bitch," and immediately regretted it.
Yeah.
Even though
you always do this back in the day, apparently, just foot in your mouth kind of stuff, like at the ranch, at the, you know, here. You're always like just saying stuff just inappropriately at whatever time. Yeah.
Yeah. I backpedaled immediately and said, "Oh my God, that's from Happy Gilmore. I'm so sorry. It was not the right time." And my boss was, he calmed down later. He was a little unhappy that I.
Yeah.
Anyway, I thought that was a funny story. Yeah, all right, let's do.
Those are always things that become great stories later, but you're mortified for like a week or two after that.
Oh, man. Oh, I see a lot of, "Hi there, Dr. Nick."
Yep.
And roll credits is something people seem to say a lot. Somebody says Martha. Somebody will yell, "Why did you say that name?"
Yeah.
Remember the 5th of November. I do that often.
Oh, yeah. Anytime someone says a character's dead, I respond with, "I'm not dead yet," from Monty Python. Yeah.
I'm not dead yet.
All right, let's do one more quick one and then we'll wrap it up.
All right.
What is a movie cameo that has aged poorly?
Okay, so this is more than a cameo, but it is a small role. But Armie Hammer in Sorry to Bother You comes up at a point in the movie where the movie is about to try to sell you something that you may not go along with completely, you know. But Armie Hammer showing up and being that person, you know, it's like, oh, he, It's weird. His cameo may not have aged poorly. It may have aged perfectly because he is this guy almost. Yep. But anyway, it's one of those that, you know, it's one of those that just is immediately off-putting as soon as you see him and you know the story of Armie Hammer, the movie didn't come out too long ago. So
that's a good one. I convinced Jonathan to watch The Faculty last week, or rewatch it. He'd seen it before, I think. And Harry Knowles is in that from Ain't It Cool News, who during the Me Too era was sort of accused by several people of inappropriate behavior. And then anything with R. Kelly, he's in Snakes on a Plane as an uncredited passenger on the plane. There are plenty of names like him, Bill Cosby, anything Bill Cosby, but I don't think Bill Cosby did a bunch of cameos. He was usually the main player. I'm seeing Trump in Home Alone 2.
Yep.
Nixon.
Kevin Spacey in Baby Driver, although it's a little bit more than a cameo. Same thing with, O.J. Simpson in the Naked Gun movies.
Yep.
Same thing. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Especially since O.J. Simpson did show up in Naked Gun 33 and a Third the year of all the O.J. Simpson stuff. So.
Right. Okay.
All right, guys. Thank you so much, chat, for showing up once again to watch us for an hour. So happy that you come here week after week. Next week is No Way Out, and I'll be looking forward to revisiting that. So I guess we'll see you guys.
See you.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Part of the live show by being a member of the Sin Club at Patreon at patreon.com/cinemasins. Chat with us on the CinemaSins Discord at discord.gg/cinemasins or CinemaSins Twitter at CinemaSins, and email any comments or questions to recotopia@cinemasins.com. That's recotopia@cinemasins.com. It's really weird to me when they do stuff like all these people were going crazy and then Limp Bizkit came up there and then he started, egging on the crowd. And I'm like, are we really going to blame Limp Bizkit for the behavior of the people in the crowd now?
I mean, isn't that what Limp Bizkit did at every single show they ever played?
Yeah, exactly. Like, to me, it's this. You either create an environment where that type of shit is quelled, or you create an environment where all that stuff that happened isn't quelled, and then you add on top of it the music that gets people into a frenzy and everything, and it just leads to a whole bunch of stuff. But, like, I'm just sitting there going, man, what do you want Limp Bizkit to do? Do you want them to go out there and play fucking cello or something? I keep thinking about all these different festivals that these people want to throw. And this has been happening forever, I guess. Like, even, you can go back to Altamont if you want. All these different things where people just don't plan for a huge venue like this, a huge 100,000 plus concert goer thing where they decide, we'll skimp on bathrooms and clean water and we'll charge a whole bunch of money for food and water and things like that in a 3-day festival geared towards people who don't have the money and, you know, all this stuff. And it's like, what do you think was going to happen? What did you think was going to happen here?
I got to go to the place where Bonnaroo happens. Mm-hmm. I've never been to Bonnaroo, the festival. I would never.
Right. But same.
I was doing a gig for, before we got into YouTube, I was doing a gig for a company that did work with Bonnaroo. Mm-hmm. So I got to go out there and walk around the grounds, and they got all kinds of stuff, not only to keep you distracted, but they have like a 3-story fountain with dozens of spouts that you can just go stand under and just basically take a shower to stay cold. And I mean, yeah, it is like, I think that's why Bonnaroo has been successful for as long as it has, is that they didn't open the festival as a money grab. They kind of thought about what it needed to be. And yeah, like, I'm fascinated by the scammy ones now, like the Fyre Fest.
Yeah.
And this thing that just came to Nashville, this Taco Fest, it was held at Nissan Stadium, and the food was tacos created with ingredients from the concession stands at the stadium,
uh-huh.
and super expensive beer, and you had to pay to even get in. And everybody was complaining about it, but on the Nashville subreddit, there was a dude like 3 weeks ahead of time that warned everybody and did all this research and says, this guy changes the name of his company and changes the name of this festival, and he goes city to city, and he just make bank selling people shitty tacos.
He's the monorail guy.
I was even reading that the Tomato Festival in East Nashville has been, like, corporatized, bought by some corporation, so there's, like, almost no actual tomatoes anymore. It's just all shit to sell.
Uh-huh.
And, like, when it opened, there were, like, dozens of tomato vendors with all these different varieties, like the very first Tomato Festival.
Mm-hmm.
And somewhere in the last few years, somebody with money bought it and, I guess, watered down the whole concept.
I don't really understand. I guess it works because people keep doing it, but I don't understand this cutting the cost so much that we're going to make everybody miserable and we're going to profit off of that. And I can't, like, it seems like to me it behooves you to give the great experience and potentially even lose money if you have to.
Yeah.
And then your next year, that's what you got to think about. The next year, everybody comes out of that going, that was great, that was fantastic, and you get more the next year, and you know, you find ways to make money, not cut costs.
Yeah.
And make money that doesn't involve charging $4 for a water, you know, that type of thing.
I saw a post. I don't know if it's true. It's just a post on Reddit.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a post of a guy who said he lived in Green Hills. That's your first mistake. In an apartment complex that doesn't have any amenities. They just got bought by a new company 2 months ago. Apparently it's a notorious company. And they got a notice that their rent was going up 90%.
Damn.
From like $1,000 to $1,900. And he went to the office to ask the new management guy, what's up with that? And the guy was like, oh, well, we're putting all new stainless steel appliances in the works. And so he asked to see an example, and the dude walked him over to his own apartment, which did not have stainless steel. It had like a black glass top stove. And the guy was saying stainless steel. Like, it's just everything in this, at least in this area, seems to be getting bought by rich people with no interest in any service whatsoever.
Yeah.
And just squeezing out. It's like what's happening with this HBO Max shit, man. This Discovery bought it, but they have like a couple $1 billion in debt. So the very first thing this guy started doing was he started axing all these HBO Max shows before they reached a point where he would have to pay residuals.
Mm-hmm.
That's a dick move.
Yeah.
And then he started cutting shows so that they wouldn't have to pay the licensing fee to air them anymore. And it's all just like this write down in some kind of gobbledygook tax speak, where all he's trying to do is increase the bottom line, and it doesn't matter. Nothing matters.
Yeah,
he's going to cut whatever he has to cut to get there. I can't imagine working on a show that had a season on HBO Max and now it's gone forever.
Mm-hmm.
You can't even show that to try and get another job.
Yeah,
it doesn't exist.
Right, and it's the same thing I never understood about the theater chains, especially, like, you know, when we'd work at Regal, and our theater had four concession stands, and for a while there, back in 1999, they were running three of them at least. I don't know if all four got done. Maybe all four got done at one point, but then they started just, oh, we'll just chop this one down, and we'll chop this one down, and we'll chop this one down. And eventually you just have one. And to them, they're looking at, okay, we paid this many, we paid the employees this amount, we got this amount in concessions, we're good. But they don't think about what's hidden on that sheet of paper that they're looking at is the amount of money that they lost by people seeing a huge line at the one stand and not going to concessions at all. And right. and then and also the amount of money they lost by not having a stand open next to the three biggest theaters and two other big theaters, by the way, concession
yeah.
D. And they don't think about that. All they look at is, oh, we spent this much on payroll and we didn't get the return we were expecting. I bet if you look back at those 1999 figures, the Hollywood 27, the concession and like, you know, I bet that amount would just floor you how much concession money they made back then.
And they don't want that anymore. Stands. No, they shut those stands down on a purely payroll decision, right?
Yeah, and purely.
What I always thought was the best thing about those concession stands is you're already down the hallway. You can come out of your theater and get a refill on popcorn and be back in 30 seconds. And it just, I feel like you're right. They lost a ton of money by closing those, but they only wanted to hit a certain goal on that per cap. That's all that mattered to them.
Yeah, and
it drove me crazy.
Yeah, and the per cap is such a bullshit number. I mean, it's it. I mean, you're just trying to get that proper ratio, and it's like the ratio is not what you're looking for. It's bottom line dollars. And yep. I think a lot of times people at Regal who had never visited Hollywood 27 must have thought, oh, this extra stand, it must be like, you know, they're not thinking about in terms of an airport terminal, you know, right. which is what Hollywood 27 was. And they're not thinking of in terms of the biggest theaters are in the very back of the theater. Like, think about how many people just would not go. That, like, I'm going to miss 10 minutes of my movie if I go all the way down yeah. there just to yeah. get a Coke. Whereas if it's just there, they're like, oh, I'll miss a minute or so. No big deal. Yeah. It is
1,500 people right there in those 3 hours.
1,500 people who are mostly not going to go down to that other concession stand.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.